Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams. Griffin Filipich is producing the show. Good to have Joe around as well. Fellas, we will be here until 12 noon today. Amy Guth comes in after that, and then pregame coverage, White Sox baseball, at 12:30 today on WGN Radio. I recently listened to the King County Cougars broadcast on another radio station, and I got to tell you, this Joe Brand, that kid can call a baseball game. It was very, very good.
That's kind of you. I didn't send it to you just to get the plug. I just figured you might want to tune in.
Well, then why did you give me $20?
I told Griffin to give you $40.
Some shrinkage may occur due to shipping. So nice to hear your voice that way, Joe. And we appreciate your company here and Domitee's as well.
Thank you.
By the way, so I drove in this morning and the skies were blue. They've clouded up a little bit now, but today is going to be a much nicer day than the last few have been. May was one of the rainiest Mays ever. June is on its way to being that. We had the worst Father's Day weekend we've ever had. At least it was the hottest. And now we've had some of the worst rains since then that we've ever had in Chicago. Some of you got 4 inches. Some of that's in your basement. Some of that leaked through your roof or it's pooling in your backyard. And I am sorry for all of you for all of that. Was it the Lake Carroll home of Ron and Sue Cox, some of our listeners and fellow Kelly Cruise travelers, midweek. And it was raining pretty hard out there, and the thunder was clapping, and there was lightning. And shortly thereafter, my friend Ron Cox sent me a video of lightning hitting a stream. Lightning hitting a stream. Griffin, can you play for us just the audio? So this is the security camera. And that explosion is the sound of the lightning hitting the water. The lightning hits the water. You can kill it, Griff. Thanks. The lightning hits the water, and then it goes kablooey. So I posted it with a reminder, something along the lines of, you know how your mom always told you, hey, get out of the pool, get out of the pond. It's raining, and lightning could hit it, and you'll get electrocuted. And you always go, yeah, Mom, yeah. You should see this. So I posted it, and people were really marveling at it until somebody then said, hey, I just looked it up on Snopes. That's not real. Oh, gee! Don't you hate it when that happens? When something just looks so awesome. In fact, it is so awesome that even though it's not the lightning that's blowing up the water out of the pond, and that's what you see, a crack of electricity, and then, shoom, the water just goes airborne like it was blown up from the bottom of the stream. In fact, it was a company that was doing something to the stream, and they had to blow up stuff underneath the stream. It was a detonation. It wasn't the lightning that was doing it at all. But it looks like a lightning strike. And it's so awesome that I'm leaving the video up. I know Griffin has the most disappointed look on his face now. Somebody Snopes did, Griff, and they told us that that's not what it appears to be. That's not the lightning striking it. It's a controlled explosion underneath the stream, blowing the water into the air. So that's no good. By the way, Griff, are you talking on the radio? Because I can't hear you. Are you? Say hello, though, just to make sure it works or not.
Hi.
Good.
You got me now?
Yeah, we do. But it did remind me of a lightning story that happened at our house. And I'm interested because I think the concern about lightning striking is still legitimate. It's on my mind now. So even though that video is bogus and awesome, I'm wondering if you could tell me what happened when lightning struck you. Your house, your car, your whatever. Once upon a time, lightning struck our house in Joliet. A bunch of trees back there. And I don't know if it hit the tree and traveled down, but the lightning certainly traveled across our concrete patio in the back and buckled it. A great big crack, like in two, ripped apart our back patio. And then it came through the back sliding glass door and blew out the light switch. It was dead. It didn't even hold when you would stick it up. It blew out that light switch, went through the living room and into the foyer by the kitchen and out the front door. I think the doorbell quit working as well. You would imagine if you had been standing there, it would have killed you, said my mom. So stay away from the, you know, sink or the bathtub. Don't be playing in the pool or the shower when lightning is coming, because look what could happen. The video we posted was not that real. Still, awesome to watch. And the story that I just told you really did happen. And I just wondered if you had any evidence like that, too. My number's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can call or text right now, but I'm just wondering what you experienced. 312-981-7200. A quick note here. I want to do a shout-out also to Cindy, is it Matre, M-A-T-R-E, and Eric Kroll, the husband and wife from Wheaton, were in our studios the other day. They were the top bidders at a gala, and part of the prize was a Pete McMurray guided tour through the studios of WGN. You will not meet two nicer people than these two. They were just delightful. I bumped into them a couple of times. They stood in my office, and we visited, and Pete was, of course, a great and gracious host, so it was nice to meet a couple of listeners. To Cindy and Eric, thanks for coming by, and thanks for listening to WGN. Also, you can Google Congressman Raja, R-A-J-A. Google that, Congressman Raja. It'll take you to a link to Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy, who is a Chicago suburb congressman. He is a Democrat. And when you get to his webpage, Congressman Raja, I'm not going to tell you how to spell Raja Krishnamurthy, but if you just do that, you'll get to his page. Google Congressman Raja, and there'll be a big button on his page to sign up for a town hall meeting that I am going to MC on Monday. It'll be at the John Marshall School of Law, which is downtown Chicago, right across from Buckingham Fountain. If you are looking at a map, you see Buckingham Fountain. On the other side of Michigan Avenue is the John Marshall Law School, and there we will be at 10 o'clock Monday morning for what they are saying is the only town hall meeting of its kind in the United States. It'll be hosted by two congressmen, one a Republican and one a Democrat. Congress people these days don't even want to do town hall meetings. Some of them literally stop doing them. They don't do them. You can call in. They do videos, but they're just so terrified of what they're going to hear from their constituents anymore that nobody wants to do them. God bless these two, Congressman Krishnamurthy and Congressman LaHood, Danny LaHood from the 18th Congressional District, downstate Peoria, Illinois, where Pete and I and actually Krishnamurthy and LaHood are all from. At least I've spent a lot of time there. So LaHood is the central Illinois congressman, and Krishnamurthy's from around here. We're all going to meet at the John Marshall School of Law at 10 a.m. on Monday. It's free, but you need to sign up. So just go to the website by Krishnamurthy, and the way to get to that is by just Googling Congressman Raja, R-A-J-A. And they said, you know, we'll both make a short, brief introductory statement and then bring it on. This is not combative. In fact, the point of it is to be civil. But will they talk about immigration? Yes. Will they talk about Chicago and Illinois and what's happening nationally? Yes. And you'll get a chance to talk to them, too. One last note before I break, and then we get to some of your phone calls. If you go to WGNradio.com, you'll be able to sign up for our next conversation with Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States. You and I will be at the College of DuPage, and that will be Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. So I hope you can join us for that. Tickets just went on sale. These always sell out. The very best seats have been purchased, but there's no bad seats in the house. So get your tickets while you can to see TJ and I on stage. You get to ask questions to the author of the Declaration of Independence as well. The title of this year's show is Thank You, Thomas Jefferson. We needed that, and boy, do we. WGNradio.com/events will get you directly to the page to purchase tickets. Okay, 312-981-7200. Marianne, your story about lightning is next. You can join us. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River in downtown Chicago. The number is 312-981-7200. Let's pick up a phone line with Marlene. Hey, Marlene, it's John. How are you this morning? Oh, I'm sorry. It's not Marlene.
Hi,
it's Marianne. Hi, Marianne. How are you?
Yeah, it's Marianne. I'm fine. I live in Plainfield. About 4 years ago, there was a terrible lightning storm. A tree got hit next to our driveway, and a made a terrible crash, jumped apparently from that to the garage door opener, shot up the garage door all the way back past the safety stop and all that.
Yeah.
So you couldn't put the door down. Rain was pouring in. We couldn't even do it manually. So the rain stops. Now it's pitch dark. We go to bed, get up in the morning. I went out and looked at the tree, and beneath the tree was a fried squirrel laying there. Apparently he'd been in the tree, and he was killed, and the door stayed up all night until we had to get a new opener.
It's not funny. It's tragic for the squirrel and his family.
It's tragic for the squirrel. We didn't miss him in the slightest, but we have plenty. So
yeah.
That's my story.
Yeah. Well put. Thanks for the phone call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye, Marianne. Yeah. No kidding. That's just creepy. Lightning does some very strange things. By the way, Joe, I wanted to mention this to you. I don't know if you saw the story. And by the way, Joe, can we hear you in sports? Say hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it sounds good. Did you see that J.R. Smith's jersey was auctioned off?
No, I did not.
So J.R. Smith, Cleveland Cavaliers, famously in the first game of the NBA playoffs, we talked about it on this show a lot, didn't know the score, and when he could have put a basket in to win the game, he pulled it out and they eventually lost the game. So J.R. Smith's jersey from that game is now famous. It was auctioned off Thursday night and drew $23,548. Somebody paid $23,000 for J.R. Smith's jersey.
Well, remember our conversation a few weeks ago about crazy sports memorabilia that had been sold? This is right up there with it. I mean, I get it. Who was willing to spend that, though?
I don't know. I'm hoping it doesn't say what the purpose of the auction was. That is, why would J.R. Smith give it up? And unless it was maybe the Cavaliers, technically owned that, and I'll bet it was a charity, and somebody was happy to give $28,000 to the Children's Hospital of Cleveland or something. But you put $28,000, you actually want that jersey. I don't know what you're going to do with it. Go, hey, this is the jersey that we lost. I mean, somebody from Golden State, I'm sure, didn't buy it.
That's what I was going to say. Wouldn't it be great if a Golden State sports bar bought it or something and then frame it and put it up there?
You know what? That may be it. I'll have Griffin look into this, see if we can find out where it went. You were going to say something else about sports memorabilia?
No, basically just how crazy people are to fork over this kind of money. I went to Illinois State, and it's the home site of the guy, Jake, from State Farm, from the commercial.
Yeah?
And they have his khakis framed up at the most famous bar.
Really? He's an ISU guy?
I don't know if he went there. I'm pretty sure he worked at the bar called Pub 2. And yeah, his khakis are framed right above one of the biggest entrances.
Oh, man. What's the name of the bar? I want to go there.
Pub 2. It's well known.
I want to see Jake.
Because I think he was a cook at the bar, too.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then his acting career just kind of took off.
The article I'm looking at is from Bleacher Report. And it mentions, there's something cool about owning a piece of sports history. So getting J.R. Smith's jersey falls in the category of Bill Buckner's glove from Game 6. Somebody probably owns that. You know, these are artifacts of sports history not associated with good, but with bad. Buckner's error glove from Game 6. Or Scott Norwood's cleat from Super Bowl 25. He was the Buffalo Bills kicker that missed a famous field goal. Does anybody, I wonder, have one of Sammy Sosa's corked bats?
Oh, boy.
That would be a fun piece of sports memorabilia. I think I might be interested in that.
A lot of people had Moises Alou sign the picture of the Bartman incident.
Of him freaking out?
Of him, like, reaching into the stands.
Oh, yeah. Really? And Alou would?
Yeah, he totally would. I've never seen him personally, but I've seen him online and on eBay, and yeah, that he signed them.
By the way, speaking of that, hey, Mark, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hey, yeah, I don't have the answer, but right when you guys were talking about that, right away popped up in my mind. Whatever happened to the Cubs baseball, the one that Bartman caught?
They blew it up.
They did blow it up, yeah?
Yeah, Harry Caray's blew it up, I want to say, in 2004, and then didn't they disintegrate the remains and mix it in with a spaghetti sauce?
Yeah.
Oh.
Literally, I mean, it was a big deal. They had a gadget that would, like, put a bunch of electrostatic electricity into it or something. It would go, and then went, bam, and the thing blew up in a bar.
There you go. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Good question, right, though. Thanks for the call. Yeah. What else? Is there any other remnant of Chicagoland sports memorabilia that is the equivalent of J.R. Smith jersey or Buckner's glove? The Bartman ball, for sure. Sosa's corked bat, but that wasn't, you know, disastrous. That was just cheating. Put your mind to it. If you come up with one for us, I'd be interested. 312-981-7200. Doma T. Pongo is looking at the news, and he's got that for you next. Thank you, Doma T. Yeah, we're looking at pretty good weather for the Pride Parade. I mean, that thing's going to line up perfectly for all the activities. And, folks, you'll see WGN radios.
Dry day, sunshine.
I know, not 99 and not 59 degrees either. It'll be right in that sweet spot. WGN Radio will have a float. You'll see members of the staff there. I rode on the float a few years ago, literally marrying people as we went down Halsted. This year, I'll be standing there watching it in the same neighborhood because I have never seen the parade. I've only been in it. I thought this year I just want to watch it go by and see everything. If you're on the floats, you get to see you, but you don't see it. So I'll have sort of the reverse view this year, and I'll wave to our friends at WGN Radio as they walk and stroll by or ride by. We were talking before the news with Doma T about some of these famous sports artifacts, infamous ones. So J.R. Smith's jersey that he wore in Game 1 of the NBA Finals was auctioned off and got about $29,000 Thursday night. Bill Buckner's glove, I think, has been auctioned off and raised some money. What else, right? Now, somebody said, whatever happened to the Bartman ball? But we all know that thing got blown up in a bar as a publicity stunt. Good for them at Harry Caray's. Scott, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What's up?
Hey, I was just listening to the show, and I was thinking about sports memorabilia. And if I don't collect it, I've got some old baseball signatures and that. But the one item that I would love to have is the American flag from the greatest play in baseball when Rick Monday scooped in and grabbed it from a couple of protesters about to set it on fire.
Yeah, it was out in left field. And was that a Wrigley or was that on the road? Was that in Los Angeles? Do you remember where that was?
I believe it was in Los Angeles. He was a Chicago Cub at the time, and I think he's an announcer for the Cubs Dodgers right now.
Yeah.
And being a Marine, we put on a Marine Corps scholarship golf outing, so we got him to sign a bunch of autograph a bunch of pictures of that play.
Wow.
And we raised a lot of money just from that.
I'll bet you did. Now imagine if you had the flag itself. And yeah, he swooped in because the guys were about to light it with the lighter, right? They were going to set it on fire. Was that it?
Exactly. And you can Google it, and there's a video of it. He scoops in, grabs it, takes the flag to the dugout, and I think that he eventually gained possession of that flag. Some people were suing, trying to get it back, but since that time, 40-some years ago, he's taken around the country and raised a lot of money for military organizations.
Oh, so he's probably got the flag, huh?
I think he does.
Well, he should. A funny story. I mean, you know, what a great story. Scott, thanks for the call.
My pleasure.
Yeah, have a good day. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. What was on your mind?
Hi, John. Good morning.
Morning.
Had a opportunity to visit the Sun-Times before they had tore the building down to build Trump Tower. And they were throwing away everything that was left in the property. And being an advertiser back in the day with them, they said, well, basically, I was there to get something from a friend who had passed, who worked there for years and then worked for me. But they said, because everything's going down, just take what you want. I said, okay. And they pretty much left me alone in the sports department, just upturned desks and what have you. But I opened up a file cabinet, and in this file cabinet are 7 3-ring binders of Chicago Bulls championship years, all the negatives. And they didn't care that everything was getting tossed over. So I took them. A friend of mine's a photographer, and you can actually put these into the small machine, hook it up to your flat screen, and see pictures of the Bulls championship years shot on just beautiful pictures in full color. It's just amazing. But, I don't have what it would possibly be worth. But memorabilia, I'd say that qualifies.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder what you could do with that. It almost sounds like something they'd put in a museum, you know, the original negative and then some of the pictures and the story behind it, something like that.
There's a lot of things on Facebook now where they show videos of Michael Jordan or Bulls championship years and comparing him to LeBron and what have you. But when you look at these, and I had an opportunity to be at some of those games, you know, Jordan was amazing, but during those years were special. But being able to look at these with some friends, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, no kidding. So you haven't had it appraised, huh? Nobody's ever told you what that's worth?
You guys had a guy on from, I think, Heritage Auctions, or a fella in Connecticut I happened to catch one time. And he wanted to talk to me, and I had left a variety of messages and didn't really chase it after that. But someday, maybe it'll put some grandkids through college. You never know.
Well, Robert, just one last thing. How many negatives do you have, would you guess?
You know, there's well over 1,000.
Wow.
I mean, there's, again, from the first year, if you imagine a three-ring binder that you would have maybe somebody's stuff in anyhow, but it's a pretty big binder. Each sleeve is two sides and has, I think, 8 or 10 from top to bottom. So roughly 20 per sleeve and 5 or 6 pictures per slide.
Nice.
So, That's a lot. But looking at them on the screen, I mentioned to your guy earlier, there's a picture in particular. You can go through these and see grease pencils of the ones that were printed in the paper, the circle they put over with the grease pencil, and that was the one that was printed.
Yeah.
And then there's pictures that just stand out with Jordan taking a shot against Utah, the final shot, the picture of Alonzo Mourning having hit Pippen in the head with his elbow. Pippen had that baseball-sized knot on his head.
Oh, that's right, so
You kind of relive them as you go through them, and pictures of Rodman getting screamed at from Jordan, and the look of frustration on. It's just cool. You know, if you were a Bulls fan, a Chicago guy, it's just cool to look at them. But the value of them has been left kind of up in the air. But someday I'll look at it.
Well, keep listening, Robert. Maybe somebody will call in and offer you $100,000. And if they do, you call right back in, okay?
You got it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, have a good day. How about that? I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe somebody out there's got a Vivian Meyer collection or picture, or the next Vivian Myers in somebody's closet. Griffin, by the way, Joe, wants Michael Jordan chewing gum. I don't know if there's a lot of value in that. Griffin's looking for Michael Jordan chewing gum.
Like gum that Michael Jordan had chewed?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I got the Luis Gonzalez story from the Diamondbacks. I don't have any sources for some Michael Jordan chewed gum.
I'm sorry, the Luis Gonzalez Diamondback story?
Brought it up a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
The World Series hero that spit out his chewing gum during spring training, and then it was sold for like $10,000.
Right, yeah. It's 10:44. This is WGN. Incidentally, I wanted to mention, too, we will interview soon the author of the book Bad Blood. I'm reading it now. John, I think his last name is pronounced Carreyrou, Carreyrou, Carreyrou. And his book is Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. It is the story of Elizabeth Holmes, that young, attractive, blonde-haired woman, do you know who I'm talking about, who was the co-founder of Theranos, the company that with a prick of a pin on your finger, you would get a drop of blood and be able to diagnose somebody's illness. It was a game changer in the medical industry. I mean, it was suddenly a billion-dollar enterprise that she started as a Stanford dropout at the age of 19. And now she's under federal indictment for wire fraud, and the whole thing has gone kaput. And so he tells you that story. And this is something that is current, right? I mean, this didn't happen 100 or 20 years ago. This happened 2 years ago. It's happening now. Her idea was to make, originally, a wearable patch with micro needles. And the patch would be able to diagnose what is wrong with you and then apply the medicine. Theranos is therapy and diagnosis. Theranos. That's where the word comes from. So the patch would sense your well-being and then deliver the right amount of medication that you were on. So if you were having some problem with something, you get the patch, and then it kind of automatically takes care of you. You don't have to worry about how much of the dose you need. Do you need more? Do you need less? One thing leads to another, and eventually Theranos became famous for creating a diagnosing device. They got away from the therapy. The actual delivery of the medicine on a patch they realized was too cumbersome or complicated. But they said, let's do this. You prick your skin, you get a drop of blood, and then you would drop that blood into a credit card-sized cartridge. And then that would go into a device that would read the blood inside. The device was about the size of a toaster. So the blood goes into the credit card cartridge, and then you stick that into this little machine, and it would diagnose and communicate with your doctor. One drop of blood, they said, could save millions of lives and millions of dollars. Everybody said, oh, this is the next best, greatest thing. And she had this marquee board of directors and scientists and investors were signing up with her. The problem was, all along, it did not work. To get that much information out of a drop of blood was just too complicated. When she showed the technology early on to investors, they would run a test with the device. They would say, okay, here's how it works. The prospective buyers would see on a computer screen images of the blood moving through the cartridge. You know, they would do a print prick, and then they would put it in the cartridge and then put it in the toaster device, and it would read it. And then they watch on the computer screen, and they see the image of the blood going through. But the tests themselves were so hit and miss. Sometimes it would diagnose correctly. Sometimes it wouldn't. They couldn't get it to work. So when they would show it to investors, instead of actually showing an actual run, an actual test, the computer screen would display a video of a correct test, and they wouldn't tell them that what they were watching was not live, wasn't the actual blood that just went in. It was simply a video. They were showing them a video of it working, not what they purported to actually be doing in front of them. It was a scam. At the age of 22, her company was valued at $165 million. Do you know a 22-year-old who can convince Wall Street investors and family members to get $165 million going? In fact, they would show slides to investors with expected revenues of $120 to $300 million. They had a PowerPoint that showed 15 deals they were negotiating. When this comes through, they said, we'll reach $1.5 billion in sales. Her company was eventually valued at $9 billion. I looked her up on Wiki today, too. It says she is an inventor and former entrepreneur. Just like that. She's indicted on wire fraud charges. The book is really interesting. It's called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. We have a one of the walls here is glass. There's two panes of glass. One's about 8, 12 inches from the other. And your eyes tend to focus on the furthest one out. So when you go stick your head to look out the window, you know, look out to see the city, and I was looking down below, you don't focus on the first pane. Does anybody know how this story ends?
You hit your head.
Bam! If you said, hey, John, go over and just hit your head against the wall, I could not have done it more cleanly and perfectly. Bam!
I wish I could laugh at you, but you're not the first person to do that around these parts.
They've got to put a thing like, I don't know, tape or a sign, hey, dummy, don't hit your head against the wall here.
Tape won't work. A news anchor bumped into a wall with a big X.
Tape. Oh, did somebody run into that?
Ran into it.
Because we've
no
got a
what.
Big X on one of the glass walls here for that very purpose.
That's the one.
Are any of the news anchors that we're talking about named Domiti Pongo?
Yep.
You didn't see his silhouette around
it's just,
his
it's just like a cartoon
onto the
just
glass.
Stamped on the glass.
Yeah, right. Right. You know, the reason I was kind of peeking down there, looking down the 18 floors to the Chicago River, is because the bridges have gone up and down. They're letting the sailboats in and out down the Chicago River into Lake Michigan. And when they do that, the bridges go up. I think a lot of us have been on those bridges or just about to get on those bridges when the bells start going ding, 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 ding. And you're terrified that you're, you know, going to be hanging there or just stuck for a long time because the bridges are going to be up for a while. But the bridge is down on Columbus Avenue now, and traffic looks like is, I think it's flowing again. I don't want to look because I'm afraid I'll crack my head against the thing. I just saw a list of the most American-made vehicles in the United States. I mean, I want to buy American. I'm sure you do, too. So they have a list of the 10 most American-made cars in 2018. The Ford F-150 is 9. Number 8, the Ford Explorer, thank you for that, made in the Chicago area. The Acura MDX is 7. The problem is, it's not so easy to predict. If you want to buy an American-made car, what is American-made? Number 6 is the Honda Pilot. Number 5 is the Chevy Volt. Number 4 is the Ford Taurus, which they list as made in Chicago. The Ford Taurus is 4. Number 3 is the Honda Ridgeline, made in Alabama. Number 2 is the Honda Odyssey, made in Lincoln, Alabama. And the most American-made vehicle, according to a piece on the USA Today Today website, is the Jeep Cherokee from Belvedere, Illinois. Did you guys see the story about the Chinese restaurant? I want your opinion about this. I brought this up briefly on our show yesterday, and there was a disagreement among the gang on the Friday show. There's an all-you-can-eat restaurant in southwest China. The owner was having trouble making a go of it. So he decided, I know what I'll do. I'll make my restaurant an all-you-can-eat restaurant. And what you'll do is you'll be able to buy a card that will be your pass for the month. The monthly pass will cost $18. Never mind the amount. He thought that would be enough. You know, the yen and the scale of economy and whatever. $18. He thought he could make it for a month in Chicago, in China. So you buy the card and you can go in that restaurant all you want and eat all you want for the month for $18. He had 500 customers a day. He suddenly, in 10 days, made $15,000. The problem is, those people ate $76,000 worth of food. And the real problem isn't that those people ate the $76,000, but here's what would happen. Do you guess what would happen? What could go wrong here? What would be the worst possible scenario for this guy? Somebody, a lot of people, would buy the card for $18. They'd go in, have lunch. They'd walk out, hand it to another guy. People were sharing it with their whole family. Oh, we don't have to go to the grocery store anymore. We've got this all-you-can-eat card. So he's had to close it with a little sign that says, we'll have to temporarily shut down.
Why not just make it a photo ID?
There you go. Yeah. Maybe you get it stamped. Maybe there's an electronic chip in there that knows that you've used this card today and it can't be used again. Sounds kind of low-tech. I love the idea. God bless the guy. He's trying to make a go of it. He thought he had a thing. He went from nobody was coming into his restaurant to he had 500 customers a day for his hot pot delicacy. And suddenly, he's rolling in the dough. I mean, you know, he went from not having a lot of money to $15,000 in 10 days, serving $76,000 worth of food. I reminded my friends on the show on Friday that a friend of mine ran a KFC restaurant in Peoria years ago, and he did an all-you-can-eat lunch, and he had to shut it down. Not because of that, but because people would just come in when the doors opened up, and they would, if it was from 11 to 1, they would sit there and just eat as much food as, it was like a contest for some people. They would just, they wouldn't come in for lunch and eat all they wanted. They would eat as much as they could for 2 hours. And so he finally had, you know, what do? Do you come up and tap the people on the shoulder and say, hey, listen, you've had, you know, 32 wings and 14 breasts. What do you say we call it a day? You know, the people go, no, I want to eat some more. It's all you can eat. So they punished him, and then that thing went away at the KFC. And I love the idea because I love me some KFC. And I would go there sometimes. But they had to shut it down because some people wouldn't go and eat a lot. They would eat as much as they could. And he couldn't make a go of it anymore.
Well, because that's the thing. People think they need to get their money's worth.
That's what it is.
At those types of things.
But this is not just getting your money's worth. This is ripping the poor guy off. You know what people were also doing, Joe? They were putting food in their bags.
I was going to say, Tupperware?
And just hauling it out.
This is college. I mean...
Right.
They actually cracked down harder in college.
How do you mean?
I remember we used to have... There were our student IDs, and they had our meals on there. and I would give my ID to my friends who came to visit or something because I had the unlimited meal plan. And they would look at the picture and say, no, this isn't you. And they would keep the ID.
Oh, that'll teach you.
Yeah.
Well, that'll teach you.
It did. I wouldn't let my friends. I need to eat. I don't care about you guys.
Well, get your own unlimited meal plan thing. Well, from there, we went to what do you do if, like, I know people who, if they're at a restaurant, will take all of the jelly packets out of that little sleeve. Or we'll take all the sugars and salts and peppers. How many of you have a grandma who has a purse and inside there right now is something that says Denny's on it? That happens.
In the case of this one restaurant, I mean, if I was one of those people, I would say, I was told it was all I could eat, all I could possibly eat. And so you made a miscalculation and I feel bad for you, buddy. But
oh, you mean, all right, so what... What does he call this promotion then? It's not an all-you-can-eat because hey, it was all I could eat.
And yeah.
you need to call it a...
I'm fulfilling my side of this bargain.
All you can eat within the hour?
All I would you can feel... eat within reason?
Then all you can start eat a that, timer?
All you can eat that I think you need.
Exactly.
That won't rub any shoulders the wrong
way. So then you're just back to a restaurant. Here's a crazy idea. How about you pay some fixed amount for each portion, and then I'll bring it to you. And if you want more, then you'll pay another.
If you want some more, then we'll take some more of your money.
I think we're onto something here, but if there was just something we could call it.
Oh, I know. A restaurant. Well, nobody was going to his hot pot restaurant. There's a lot of hot pot restaurants. They say his hot pot food was pretty good. Then he came up with the idea for $18. It's sort of like that movie club that you have right now where you pay a fixed amount of money.
Yeah, and the movie
$10
pass.
A month for movie pass, and you get to see all the movies you want.
And it's funny, that one's...
That guy's not making any money, by the way.
And everyone's just sitting around wondering when it's going to end because there's no way. But they claim, no, it's working, we're fine. But this one's so much more transparent. It's very funny. It's like, no, that was way too much food.
Somebody coming up and saying, sir, you've watched way too many movies today. I'm sorry.
Frankly, some of these aren't that good, so we're going to have to cut you off.
No, but they never have to do that because you just don't understand. They just promise you it's fine, but that guy is just like, no, that was too much food.
Yeah, in fact, actually, with MoviePass, $10, you get to see all the movies you want for a month. And his company is charged the fixed amount. They pay retail for that ticket. So if it's $12 to go to a movie and you go to 10 movies this month, his company's out $120.
Yeah.
And you paid him $10 for that privilege. I've talked to this guy a few times on this show, and he insists that they're going to make money.
And now AMC is starting their competing membership program that's going to function similarly. And so that is the future of the business in some form, but I still don't understand what exactly it's going to look like when all the dust settles.
One thing he wants to do is marshal forces. Say, all right, if you want all of my MoviePass people to come to your theater, you've got to give us a discount. So he's got that. He also wants it to be used on discounts for concessions. And he reminds the theaters that if they would do business with him and help him become profitable, more people will go to their theaters. And people spend more money on the concessions than they do the movie tickets anyway. That's where the profit center is. At least that's where the profit is. So he's saying, do business with me. I'll get you folks. You just have to give me a discount so that I can start to make money on this. That isn't happening yet. And this is John. You're on WGN. We're talking about these food discounts. And you're on the air. What did you want to say?
I went to a restaurant a long time ago. Well, a lot of them a long time ago. And they would have a buffet, or they would say all you can eat. And I was watching a bunch of older ladies at a table, and they would open up their purse and have Ziploc bags in their purses and fill the Ziploc bags up with food, and then they would eat all they wanted to eat at the table, and then they'd pay and leave.
So that's frowned upon.
You're not, there's a word for that. I'm thinking theft is what that's called.
Ah.
Or being cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
Or being cheap. But no, it's terrible what people do. I mean, everybody a business has to run on a profit. If the business doesn't run on a profit, it's going to close and you're going to be out the all you can eat forever.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they don't think about. You know, they're only out for themselves, basically. That's it. Greed. It's called greed, John.
Glad you called,
unfortunately.
Man.
Unfortunately.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Well, do you guys ever do this? Now we're all sitting here holier than thou, right? Except for Joe, who's admitted that he was part of a scheme that almost got him jailed at ISU. So do you ever do this? You are at McDonald's or Burger King or wherever it is that you have a self-serve soda. You've paid for the self-soda cup. They give you the cup. You go get your medium soda. On the way out, what do you do? What do you do, Joe Brand, on the way out of that restaurant?
You fill that sucker all the way up to the top.
It's the American thing to do. And now, that one isn't wrong.
You do it with coffee, too. You go get your coffee, and they say, here's your thing. You go to Panera, you sell your service, and then you drink the coffee while you're sitting there. And you go, you know what? I think I'll go get a whole cup, and I'll just take that on the road. I'm not sure what the ruling on that one is. I'm not sure if that's right or not. Steve Bertrand said, I'm not sure if it's wrong to fill up your Panera cup on the way out. Steve Bertrand was saying that where you consume the thing is what's critical. So if, for instance, you order a bagel at Denny's and it comes with butter and then they have that little tray of jellies, he said, you can put the jelly on the bagel there at Denny's. But if you choose not to, you cannot take that little jelly packet with you. And I said, I think you can. I think there's an expectation that you get jelly with the bagel. And even if you don't eat the jelly there, you can take that jelly home.
Kind of like hotel soaps. It's like built in. It's expected that you'll take it.
Well, and in fact, I think you've paid for the hotel soaps. I feel guilty when I don't take the body cream and body wash because I think I just paid $174 to sleep here tonight.
Okay, but how much money are you spending at Denny's that you feel like you've definitely paid for? What do you drop at Denny's?
Who's putting jelly $6? On a bagel?
Okay, I think we're veering off my point.
No, I think we're onto something here. Really, I think you've narrowed in.
So when you go to a hotel and you go, I've got the shower cap, I've got the body wash, you've got the cream rinse, you've got the shampoo, you've got the facial bar.
Those are souvenirs, as far as I'm concerned.
Somebody told us Friday that they had an uncle that traveled a lot, and he would take everything that wasn't tied down.
You've got the lamp. You've got
pillowcases.
Sailboat art. So he would take all of that stuff and then give it as Christmas time as gifts to the kids.
Come on.
And who doesn't want Motel 6 body wash under the tree on December 25th, huh? I'm just wondering what your rulings on these are. I got to take a break here, don't Griffin, and then we'll pick up your phone calls and text messages. Have you been to this movie? By the way, it just dawns on me, we didn't play The Mincing Rascals for you today. We recorded it. We posted it. You may have briefly heard it or heard it. It was briefly on my Facebook page. We pulled it down because of a studio issue. We just weren't able to get a quality recording. So the gang was there, and we were brilliant and eloquent and disagreeable and civil at the same time. But I thought that the hiss in the recording just made it unpleasant to listen to, and I don't want you to listen to it if it's not as good as it can be. So The Mincing Rascals will return on Thursday. That's when we record our weekly podcast, a roundtable conversation, and we will broadcast part of the podcast next Saturday here on WGN. Meantime, Marlene's on line two. Hey, Marlene, it's John Williams. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing fine, but here's what I want to hear somebody tap.
Yep.
My husband's family had a great-great-grandma in it, and whenever we'd go out to eat, yeah, Grandma Lubbock would take the salt and the pepper and all that, but she would never let anybody return her dish to the waiter when they were finished eating, because she collected all the bones, except fish bones, and she had a purse full of plastic bags. She would take the bones home, and she boiled them and made her own soap out of all our bones, rib bones, pork bones, beef bones.
Wait a minute. She made soap or soup?
Soap, S-O-A-P. Not soup, soap. She had lye. She had scents. She had all kinds of things. And Grandma Lubbock was known for making her own soap. How she did it, I don't know, but she took anything but fish bones. If you had a bone on your plate, chicken, pork, beef, whatever. And nobody in her purse was a riot because it was a big purse for a little lady. And she had all the bags carefully separated with everything in them. Plus, she had the bags bit of salt and the pepper and all of that stuff. So we left a perfectly clean table every single time. And she was the sweetest little old lady you wanted to meet. But boy, was she thrifty. That's the best way I can put it. Extremely thrifty.
Thrifty, yeah, there you go. Wow.
Never heard of anybody else doing that, but Grandma Lovick did it. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Marlene, I got a kick out of that. I'm really glad you called.
Shave your bones. Hit me well. Thank you.
Do you hear Lou Manfredini towards the end of his show today? He was talking about how he recently discovered that the gelatinous nature of jelly is from the connective tissue of animals like chicken bones and things like that. And it really bothers him now. So he tells his wife to only buy preserves, no jelly, because Lou doesn't want, evidently, animal parts in his food, which means he's probably not going to have a steak next time he goes out. Right, Lou? I didn't get into that with him.
When I find myself in times of trouble, one man comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Yeah, let it be, let it be, let it be, yeah, let it be. There will be an answer, let it be.
Give me the harmony.
Let it be, let it be.
Okay, so I know that song, and one of them is Paul McCartney. What are we listening to there, Griff?
You didn't see that video?
Uh-uh.
Everybody was sharing it a couple days ago. That was James Corden.
Oh, was that from the Carpool Karaoke?
With Paul McCartney.
Okay, I did see that. Yeah. The one song I saw them was Baby, You Can Drive My Car.
Yeah.
They did that one as well, huh?
They did a ton of... I mean, it's like 23 minutes.
Oh,
those things
gosh.
Go so long now.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just saw the one.
23 minutes is an eternity online.
Oh, my gosh. And
you see that, it's like, oh... to clear out my week.
This is America. I don't have 23 minutes.
They did a lot of Beatles songs, yeah.
Yeah, well, go figure. Did they do Wings, do you know? Did they do
I didn't.
That?
It's 23 minutes. I made it to 6. I enjoyed it, though.
I thought, okay, so what are you asking us? This is our Vibe Score segment. Griffin usually drives the bus here, and he throws some stuff at us for our 1 to 100 scoring. What's the question here?
Maybe if you saw the video, I kind of assumed you would have, but now... In the light of the fact that you have not.
Well, but I have. I saw a different part of it than you.
Yeah, what did you think? Did you think it was fun?
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
I love Paul McCartney anyway. I mean, what's to hate about Paul McCartney? But I like that in his old age, Paul is fun. He doesn't take himself too seriously. And he can still put on a good show. I saw him a couple of years ago in Minneapolis. And the fact that, for instance, when they do Baby, You Can Drive My Car, and then they go beep, 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 yeah, on each beep, he and Corden were in a different seat, which means, just think about it. Hey, Paul McCartney, we want to do a funny thing with one of your songs. How about if on the beeps, you guys get out and we'll video you in different seats of the car? It'll be beep, beep, beep. It'll be funny, right? Somebody pitches that to Paul McCartney. He's Sir Paul McCartney. And he goes, yeah, that's great. Let's do it. I love that about that.
He did seem very game and, very up to it.
Yeah, and it turns out, James Corden's such a good singer anyway, that was very good. I liked what you were playing for us, and I liked the one I saw. 1 to 100? 92. Ah!
You can't give Paul McCartney less than 100?
I was really hoping Domity would come through with just some fire Beatles take, just like, eh.
They're not my people. It's not my song. It's not myself.
I know. But it's the Beatles. They're too iconic. I can't, man. I know. I wish I had a fire hot take, but I don't, man. I don't. Sorry. Got nothing.
I mean, I'd give it like an 85. I'm ready to watch the rest of it. It seemed very fun.
It's one of those things that I really like, but don't watch or do. You know what I mean? But I appreciate that it's there. This has been my take for years on Monday Night Football. I haven't watched a full Monday Night Football game in years, but I so like that it's out there. It's part of Americana. It was part of my youth. I love a Monday night football game. Haven't watched one in years.
It's funny you say that. I was having this debate with people talking about boycotting football with the whole Kaepernick kneeling thing. And I was like, when was the last time any of you guys watched the game anyway? I think you guys have been silently boycotting the football NFL for no reason.
You know, it's very easy to, people do that too, like canceling subscriptions to newspapers when they see a story they don't like. It's like, I feel very confident that you don't have a subscription to that paper anyway. It's very easy to cancel that fake subscription. I'm also, whatever. I'm boycotting the Beatles. That was the point.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy since they haven't been together in 50
right.
years.
And only two of them live, so you've got that.
Not buying any more of their albums.
Hey, Joe, what do you give that Paul McCartney, James Corden
Well,
karaoke?
You guys are barking up my tree. I love the Beatles. Paul McCartney is my favorite Beatle. I saw him last year. He was fantastic. I actually watched that thing live. I don't know if it was live. I watched it on the little box called the television. I watched it there. I think I watched all 23 minutes. It was fantastic. I give it a 100. They did a lot of cool things other than just cool karaoke. They went to his childhood home. They went to a bar, and no one knew that Paul McCartney was there. He just started playing music. It was outstanding.
And he's telling stories and stuff too. It was very cool.
Yeah, and like you said, John, how he's just willing to talk to anybody. He's walking out of his house, and the street is just riddled with people. Hey, Paul. Hey, Paul. Everyone wants a piece of him. Someone goes, "Hey, my brother's named after you." He's like, "Oh, right. Say hello to him for me." Like acting like he knows everybody. You know, he's just seems like the coolest person in the world and wants to talk to you.
I always thought that if I was Michael Jordan or Paul McCartney or somebody like that, I would be very good at it. Because how hard can your life be? And yet, you know, some of these celebrity, millionaire, zillionaire people are so dramatic and life is so complicated for them or whatever. I'm thinking, what have you got to complain about, you know? I would be very friendly to people. I would say hello to strangers.
Paul McCartney always been this way? I mean, he's had a lot of time to settle into the role.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I don't agree with you on that. I mean, I see what you... It, like, turns the world into a small town. But what if you're not in the mood for it every day for the rest of your life?
That can
all
be a
the time.
Annoying. It would be a little annoying. Like, you're sitting there at a restaurant, right? And you're just trying to have a dinner.
For him, it's for real all the time. I think I would kind of hate that.
I kind of feel like legends have nothing but time. Like, you know, you're Paul McCartney. Like, what are you doing? You're not doing any more albums or anything.
What are you in this took studio it, right now?
This thing took at least 23 minutes to film. I mean, that's... that's like a whole day.
Honestly,
what do you miss out on? Lunch? I mean, come on.
That is what I was thinking, too. You know, what point does a guy like Paul McCartney say, you know what? I'm not going to do this. It's not worth my time to do something like this. But apparently the whole carpool karaoke thing, I mean, obviously, as you said, Griff, it's grown so much more than what it used to be. It's just cool to see that he is still willing to give time for that. And you mentioned not being in the mood for all the fame and everything. He mentioned when the Beatles were first starting to get big, he had to wear a disguise back to his house. He had a cap, a fake mustache, and sunglasses, as he said, and just right then and there, he was already kind of done with the fame.
I want you to do your next sport report as Paul McCartney, by the way.
I can say Liverpool and sunglasses, and that's about it. I can't say Cubs or White Sox.
But I'm also thinking of athletes in town who you go, you know what? If I was, here again, I think I'd be very good at this. If I had the skills to be a professional athlete, I would someday retire, get fired, whatever, after 4 or 5 years in the bigs. That's about the lifespan of a professional athlete. And then I would have a restaurant or a car dealer, and I would shake hands, and during the games, I would be signing autographs. I'd be there early. The fans would have loved me if I just had the skills.
How hard is it to be a professional? I hear you, but it's just not. There was actually a you know, those like short humor pieces they do in The New Yorker. They just recently had one by a writer I like a lot. Her name is Kelly Conaboy. It was called, and it was, the gist of it was, if I was a ballerina, I would be the best ballerina you've ever seen.
Absolutely.
And it goes into detail on how great she would be if she was one.
Right.
And like, that's what you're trafficking now.
Absolutely. Like baseball players. If I was a pitcher and I wasn't starting,
the rest of my life would just go away. I would have no other earthly problems if I was good at something. I mean,
I think it's a small burden that you have to carry. This
notion. I'm not crying for them.
Okay, fair enough. But give us something else that we should be rating here on the Vibe Score segment.
I bet you talked about it during the week, but the Phil Mickelson thing, that was so long ago now, but I just wanted to hear what you and Joe and Domati thought about that.
Right. Okay, so you're talking about in the Saturday, I believe it was, of the U.S. Open, he hit a moving ball violating the rules. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, he putted past the hole and just ran to it and stopped it with his
the way you and I putter. Do when we goofy golf. There's Phil Mickelson.
It did look like me at a mini golf. Now, I guess, he later half apologized and was like, look, I knew I was taking the penalty for doing that, which is two strokes, I think.
And he thought that was a better option than having to putt the distance he would if he hadn't illegally stopped the ball.
Which just seems probably true, but I guess some people might have thought it was like a break in decorum. In the moment, it did look like, wow, he just looks like he thinks he owns the place. Like, it doesn't matter to him or something.
Yeah.
I was curious. It just 100, it's fine, no big deal. 0, how dare you, Phil?
Joe, where are you on that one?
I enjoyed it just because it humanizes him. You know, it kind of reminded me of Happy Gilmore, obviously to a much, much, much smaller scale. But that's what people like. They want to see people get frustrated, and they can relate to that. We can all relate to Phil Mickelson missing a putt that he should have landed, and that's just a reactionary thing. I didn't personally see it as like he owned the place. I didn't see it as him trying to show up everyone else. I just saw it as him being frustrated with himself, and I think we've all been there.
Which is not how he sold it, though. A lot of people said, hey, what do you know? He had a meltdown. He just did what we all do. You're so ticked. You just say, ah, screw it, and you hit the ball again before it's even stopped. And he said, no, I have always thought about using that maneuver to save myself a stroke if I needed it. And I think I call BS on that, right? I'm
you don't understand how brilliant my missed putt was. His tactical maneuver.
You talk about humanizing him. I wanted him to own it and go, yeah, you know, I shot an 81. I'm sorry, I was embarrassed and angry. Have a nice day. So I'm giving that a 32. I'm not buying the strategy component of that.
I give it a 100. I mean, things happen in golf. The mildest things create such an outrage. People will get to whispering louder. No one yells. They just whisper loudly. I think we need more breaks in decorum on golf courses across this country. More Phil Mickelsons. I'm down.
Domati just handing out hundreds today like nothing.
Domati for president or whatever he's running for over there. It's our little Vibe Score segment. Thanks, Griff, for walking us through some of those. We had more for you today, but we kind of got caught up on the how much fun would it be to be a celebrity. I would be a very good one. All right, let's 10. It's 11:51. Thomas Jefferson is coming to town. Thomas Jefferson is coming to town. I want you to hear a little of TJ. Thomas Jefferson is going to come to town Saturday, August 18th. You may know I once or twice a year do a staged, spontaneous conversation with one of these historical figures. We visit with Teddy Roosevelt sometimes too, but TJ's coming to town Saturday, August 18th. We'll be at the College of DuPage. There will be a 10 a.m. show. The title of the show is Thank You, Thomas Jefferson. We needed that. These are always humorous and informative, and you feel so good coming out of there about what you've learned and about the whole American experience. We had Thomas Jefferson on the phone the other day. Griff, we asked him about the power that the president has, and did we give or did they give the president too much?
You take my point, however, that the founding fathers would probably be appalled by the executive authority in any of your recent presidents. In fact, all presidents, perhaps since Theodore Roosevelt, that the founding fathers were highly uncomfortable with executive authority. And we did everything we could to prevent a kingship here. If that has essentially evolved over time, then you either need to bring the Constitution into harmony with that new reality, or you need to strike back against a runaway executive.
I asked him about the impeachment process because some folks want to see Donald Trump kicked out and some don't. But how easy or difficult should it be? This is Thomas Jefferson, one of the founding fathers, not an author of the Constitution, mind you, talking about impeachment.
You have one remedy and one remedy only under our Constitution for a presidency that has gone bad, and that is impeachment. And I always thought that the impeachment clause of the Constitution was too narrowly drawn, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors. It seemed to me that there ought to be a more elastic clause there so that we could get rid of presidents who were incompetent or senile or who were engaged in malfeasance, were fundamentally misrepresenting the will of the American people, but perhaps had not committed any prosecutable crimes. That the narrowness of the impeachment clause, I think, has prevented you from ever having a successful impeachment of a president.
Well, think about that. We haven't. So that's Thomas Jefferson talking about some stuff back then that relates to us today. I asked him about the World Cup, and I'll have to ask him about how at Monticello now you can see where Sally Hemings was kept or lived with her family, which was also his. He didn't want to talk about it on the phone the other day, but it will be something we'll have to address on stage. All right, that's the Thomas Jefferson Show, Saturday, August 18th. That's just what a conversation like him can sound like. I'm not exactly sure what we'll be doing on stage. But remember, you get to ask questions. Tickets available at WGNRadio.com/events.